I think you'll agree that this is not how cultural change works. A complex meme. I think being errors. It arises because some person knuckles down, racks his brain, musters his ingenuity, and composes or writes or... I think you'll agree that this is not... Creator is influenced by ideas in the air and may polish draft after draft, but neither of these progressions is like natural selection. Just compare the input and the output. Draft 5 and Draft 6, or an artist's inspiration and her oeuvre. They do not differ by a few random substitutions. The value added with each iteration comes from focusing brain power on improving the product, not from retelling or recopying it hundreds of thousands of times in the hope that some of the malaprops or typos will be useful. Stop being so literal-minded, respond the fans of cultural evolution. Of course, cultural evolution is not an exact replica of the Darwinian version. In cultural evolution, this cultural evolution is not an exact characteristics are inherited. Lamarck, while being wrong about biological evolution, turned out to be right about cultural evolution. But this won't do. Lamarck, recall, was not just unlucky in his guess about life on this planet. As far as explaining complex design goes, his theory was, and is, a non-starter. It is mute about the beneficent force in the and goes, his theory was, and in the organism that bestows the useful mutations. And it's that force or voice that's doing all the creative work. To say that cultural evolution is Lamarckian is to confess that one has no idea how it works. The striking features of cultural products, namely their ingenuity, beauty, and truth, analogous to organisms' complex adaptive design, come from the mental computations that direct, analogous to organism, acquire, that is, understand, the characteristics. Models of cultural transmission do offer insight on other features of cultural change, particularly their demographics, how memes can become popular or unpopular. But the analogy is more from epidemiology than from evolution, ideas as contained popular. But the analogy is diseases that cause epidemias more from cause adaptations. They explain how ideas become popular, but not where ideas become popular. Many people unfamiliar with cognitive science see cultural evolution as the only hope for grounding wispy notions like ideas and culture in rigorous evolutionary biology. To bring culture into biology, they read like ideas and culture in rigorous reason. One shows how it evolved by its own evolutionary biometer. The products of evolution don't have to look like evolution. The stomach is firmly grounded in biology, but it does not randomly secrete variants of acids and enzymes, retain the ones that break down food a bit, let them sexually recombine and reproduce, and so on for hundreds of thousands of meals. Natural selection also sexually recombine and reproduce, sexually such trial and error, and so on for hundreds of processor, releasing the right acids and enzymes on cue. Likewise, a group of minds does not have to recapitulate the process of natural selection to come up with a good idea. Natural selection designed the mind to be an information processor, and now it perceives, imagines, simulates, and plans. When ideas are passed around, they aren't merely copied with occasional typographical errors. They are evaluated, discussed, improved on, or rejected. Indeed, a mind that passively accepted ambient memes would be a sitting duck for exploitation by others, and would have quickly been selected against. Be a sitting duck, for he wrote that nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of the geneticist Theodosius Dobzhansky of evolution. We can add that the famous evolution created psychology, and that is how it explains culture. The most important relic of early humans is the modern mind. Good ideas. You have channel surfed to a rerun of L.A. Law, and you want to know why the harpy lawyer Rosalind Shays... You have channel surfed to a sweeping on the witness stand. Rerun of L.A. Law increased in volume until the pressure exceeded the surface tension by such and such an amount. You would squelch the lecture. What you want to find out is that she hopes to win a lawsuit against her former employers and is shedding crocodile tears to convince the jury that when the firm fired her, she was devastated. But if you saw the next episode and wanted to know the jury that when the firm fired her, she was why she plummeted to the bottom of an elevator devastated. Her motives would be irrelevant to anyone but a Freudian gone mad. The explanation is that matter in free fall, Rosalind Shays included, accelerates at a rate of 9.8 meters per second per second. There are many ways to explain an event, and some are better than others. Even if neuroscientists... There are many ways to explain an... They decode the entire wiring event, and some are better sense when it is explained in terms of beliefs and desires, not in terms of volts and grams. Physics provides no insight into the machinations of a crafty lawyer, and even fails to enlighten us about many simpler acts of living things. As Richard Dawkins observed, if you throw a dead bird into the air, it will describe a graceful parabola, exactly as physics books say it should, then come to rest on the ground and stay there. It behaves as a solid body of a particular mass and wind resistance ought to rest on the ground, and it will not describe a parabola and come to rest on the ground. It will fly away and may not touch land this side of the county boundary. We understand birds land this side of the county boundary, plants in terms of their innards. Fits under a microscope. We need yet another kind of explanation for artifacts like a chair and a crowbar. A statement of the function the object is intended to perform. It would be silly to try to understand why chairs have a stable horizontal surface by cutting them open and putting bits of them under a microscope. The explanation is that someone designed the chairs by cutting them open and putting bits of us by cutting them behind. Them under a microscope, believe that the mind is equipped with innate intuitive theories or modules for the major ways of making sense of the world. There are modules for objects and forces, for animate beings, for artifacts, for minds, and for natural kinds, like plants, animals, and minerals. Don't take the theory idiom for natural kinds, like plants and for natural kinds. We have seen people don't realize and minerals for too seriously either. People can mix and match their ways of knowing. A concept like throwing, for example, welds an intention, intuitive psychology, to emotion, intuitive physics. And we often apply modes of thinking to subject matters they were not designed for, such as in slapstick humor, person as object, animistic religion, tree or mountain as having a mind, and anthropomorphic animal stories, animals with human minds. As I have mentioned, I prefer to think of the ways of knowing in anatomical terms, as mental systems, organs, and tissues, like the immune system, blood, or skin. Medical terms, specialized structures, but don't necessarily come in encapsulation. They accomplish specialized functioned packages. I would often, thanks to their knowing, is surely too short. Cognitive scientists think of people as Mr. Spock without the funny ears. A more realistic inventory would include modes of thought and feeling for danger, contamination, status, dominance, fairness, love, friendship, sexuality, children, relatives, and the self. Friendship, sexuality, are innate is different from saying that knowledge is innate. Obviously, we have to learn about frisbees, butterflies, and lawyers. Talking about innate modules is not meant to minimize learning, but to explain it. Learning involves more than recording experience. Learning requires couching the records of experience so that they generalize more than recording experience in useful ways. Learning requires this modern version of the blank slate as a paradigm of intelligence. When we watch lawyers in action, we draw conclusions about their goals and values, not their tongue and limb trajectories. Goals and values are one of the vocabularies in which we mentally couch our experiences. They cannot be built out of simpler concept vocabularies in which we mentally couch from our physical knowledge the way and velocity or power can be built out of energy and time. They are primitive or irreducible, and higher-level concepts are defined in terms of them. To understand learning in other domains, we have to find their vocabularies, too. Because a combinatorial system like a vocabulary can generate a vast number of combinations, one might wonder whether human thoughts can be generated by a single system, a general-purpose Esperanto of the mind. But even a very powerful combinatorial system, a general-purpose Esperanto of vast numbers, but it will never spell a sentence. A dedicated word processor can type Borges's infinite library of books with all combinations of characters, but it can never... that little still includes distinct hardwired vocabularies for text, graphics, logic, and several kinds of numbers. When the computers are programmed into artificial intelligence reasoning systems, they have to be innately endowed with an understanding of the basic categories of the world. Objects which can't be in two places at once, endowed with an understanding of the basic category animals which live for a single interval of the world. That is no less true of the human mind. Even a dozen innate mental vocabularies, a wild and crazy idea, according to critics, would be a small number with which to spell the entirety of human thought and feeling, from the meanings of the 500,000 words in the Oxford English Dictionary to the plots of Scheherazade, from the meanings of the 1,001 words in the material world. And one of the first things in life we must figure out is how objects bump into each other and fall down elevator shafts. Until recently, everyone thought that the infant's world was a kaleidoscope of sensations, a blooming, buzzing confusion, in William James's memorable words. Piaget claimed that infants were sensory-motor creatures, unaware that objects cohere and persist and that the world works by external laws rather than the infant's actions. Infants would be like the man in the famous limerick about Berkeley's idealist philosophy. There once was a man who said, God must think it Berkeley's idealist continues to be when there's no one about in the quad. Seemingly odd, if he finds that this tree contamination, or that objects do not exist when you aren't looking at them, is not refutable by any observation. A baby could experience the blooming and buzzing all its life unless it was equipped with a mental mechanism that interpreted the blooms and buzzes as the outward signs of persisting objects that follow mechanical laws. We should expect it and buzzes as the outward signs of infants to show some appreciation of physics. Persisting objects, full laboratory studies can tell us what it is like, rather, what it was like, to be a baby. Unfortunately, infants are difficult experimental subjects, worse than rats and sophomores. They can't easily be conditioned, and they don't talk. But an ingenious technique, refined by the psychologists, and they don't talk. Elizabeth Spelke and Rene Bike. But an infant are good at getting bored. When infants see the same old thing again and again, they signal their boredom by looking away. If a new thing appears, they perk up and stare. Now, old thing and new thing are in the mind of the beholder. By seeing what revives babies' interest and what prolongs their new thing are in the mind of the beholder. New thing are in the mind. Guess at what thing. By how they categorize experience. It's especially informative when a screen first blocks part of the infant's view and then falls away, for we can try to tell what the babies are thinking about the invisible part of their world. If the baby's eyes are only momentarily attracted and then wander off, we can infer that the scene was in the baby's mind's eye all along. If the baby stares longer, we can infer that the scene came as a surprise. 3 to 4 month-old infants, baby stares longer, we can infer that the baby stares longer, we can infer that the scene came as a surprise because their stereo vision, motion perception, visual attention, and acuity have just matured. The tests cannot by themselves establish what is and is not innate. 3 month-old matured. The tests were not born yesterday, so anything they cannot by themselves still have a lot of maturing to do. So anything they come to know later could emerge without learning, just as teeth and pubic hair do. But by telling us what babies know at what age, the findings narrow the options. Spelke and Philip Kelman wanted to see what infants treated as an object. Remember that it is not easy. Spelke and Philip Kelman wanted to see, even for an adult, to say what infants treat. Stretch of the visual field with a smooth silhouette, a stretch with a homogeneous color and texture, or a collection of patches with a common motion. Often these definitions pick out the same pieces, but when they don't, it is common motion that wins the day. When pieces move together, we see them as a single object. When pieces go, it's common motion that wins the day. It's common motion, we see them as separate objects. When pieces move, because bits of matter that are attached to one another usually move together. Bicycles and grapevines and snails may be jagged agglomerations of different materials, but if you pick up one end, the other end comes along for the ride. Kelman and Spelke bored babies with two sticks poking out from behind the top and bottom edges of a wide screen. The question was whether the babies would see the sticks as part of a single object. When the screen was removed, the babies saw either one long stick or two short ones with a gap between them. If the babies had visualized a single object, then seeing a single object would be a bore, and two object would be a bore, and two. If the babies had visual out of each piece as its own object, then seeing a single object would come as a surprise, and two a bore. if they had looked at one versus two objects without having seen anything beforehand, these baseline times were subtracted out. Infants might have been expected to see the two pieces as two pieces, or, if they had mentally united them at all, to have used all the correlations among the features of an object as criteria. Smooth-silted them at all, to have used all the silhouettes, common colors, common text correlations among the features. Infants have an idea of objecthood early in life, and it is the core of the adult concept. Parts move together. When two sticks peeking out from behind the screen moved back and forth in tandem, babies saw them as a single object and were surprised if the raised screen revealed two. When they didn't move, babies did not object and were surprised if the raised expect them to be a single object, each screen revealed. When a stick peeked out from behind the top edge and a red jagged polygon peeked out from behind the bottom edge and they moved back and forth in tandem, babies expected them to be connected even though they had nothing in common but motion. The child is parent to the adult and other principles of intuitive physics. One is that an object cannot pass through. Child is parent to the adult has shown that four-month-old infants are surprised when a panel just in front of a cube somehow manages to fall back flat to the ground, right through the space that the cube should be occupying. Spelke and company have shown that infants don't expect an object to pass through a barrier or through a gap that is narrower than the object is. A second principle is that objects move along continuous trajectories. They cannot disappear from one place and a second principle is that objects move along continuous. Sees an object pass behind the left edge of a left screen and then seem to reappear from behind the right edge of a right screen without moving through the gap between the screens, she assumes she is at the edge of a right screen seeing two objects. When she, without moving through the other edge of the screen, cross the gap and then pass behind the right screen, she assumes she is seeing one object. A third principle is that objects are cohesive. Infants are surprised when a hand picks up what looks like an object, but part of the object stays behind. A fourth principle hand picks up what looks like an object, but pull is that objects move each other by part of the object stays. After repeatedly seeing an object pass behind a screen and another object pop out, babies expect to see one launching the other like billiard balls. They are surprised when the screen reveals one ball stopping short and the second just up and leaving. So, 3 to 4 month-old infants see objects and just up and leaving. Remember them and expect them to obey the laws of. Babies are not stoned, as James Piaget, Freud, and others thought. And as the psychologist David Geary has said, James's blooming, buzzing confusion is a good description of the parent's life, not the infant's. The discovery also overturns the suggestion that babies stop their world from spinning by manipulating objects, walking around them, talking about them, or hearing them talked about. 3-month-olds can barely orient, see, touch, and reach, let alone manipulate, walk, talk, and understand. They could not have learned anything by the standard techniques of interaction, feedback, and language. Nonetheless, they are sagely understanding a stable and law. Sagely understanding a stable and law. Standard techniques of interaction should not call MIT admissions just yet. Awful world. Awful world. Grass. Proud parents surprised when a hand pushes a box off a table and it remains hovering in midair, but the slightest contact with the edge of the table or a fingertip is enough for them to act as if nothing were amiss. And they are not fazed when a screen rises to reveal a falling object that has defied gravity by coming to rest in midair. Nor are they to reveal a falling object that has nonplussed when a ball rolls right over defied gravity. Infants don't quite have inertia down either. For example, they don't care when a ball rolls toward one corner of a covered box and then is shown to have ended up in the other corner. But then adults' grasp of gravity and inertia is not so firm either. The psychologists Michael McCloskey, Alfonso Caramazza, and Bert inertia is not so firm either. Green asked college students what the psychologist whirling tether ball was cut loose. A depressingly large minority, including many who had taken physics, guessed that it would continue in a curving path. Newton's first law states that a moving object continues to move in a straight line unless a force acts on it. The students explained that the moving object continues to move in a straight object acquires a force, or momentum, remembering the lingo but not the concept, called it angular momentum, which propels it along the curve until the momentum gets used up and the path straightens out. Their beliefs come right out of the medieval theory in which an object is impressed with an impetus that maintains the object's motion and gradually dissipates. These howlers come from conscious theorizing. They are not what people are prepared to see. When people view their paper and pencil answer as a computer animation, they burst out, "People are prepared to see. People are prepared to see." When people view their paper before plunging straight down. But the cognitive misconceptions do run deep. I toss a ball straight up. After it leaves my hand, which forces act on it on the leap? I toss a ball straight way up, at the apogee, and on the way up. To think that momentum carries the ball up against gravity, the forces equal out, and then gravity is stronger and pushes it back down. The correct answer is that gravity is the only force and that it applies the whole time. The linguist Leonard Talmy points out that the impetus theory infuses our language. The linguist Leonard, when we say, "the ball kept Talmy," points out the ball as having an inherent tendency toward rest. When we say, "the ridge kept the pencil on the table," we are imbuing the pencil with a tendency toward motion, not to mention flouting Newton's third law, action equals reaction, by imputing a greater force to the ridge. Talmy, like most cognitive scientists, believes action by imputing a greater force that the conceptions drive the language, force to the ridge. When it comes to more complicated motions, even perception fails us. The psychologists Dennis Prophet and David Gilden have asked people simple questions about spinning tops, wheels rolling down ramps, colliding balls, and Archimedes in the bathtub displacements. Even physics professors guess the wrong outcome if they are not allowed to fiddle with equations on paper. If they are, they spend a quarter of an hour working it out and then announce that the problem is trivial. When it comes to these motions, video animations of impossible events look quite natural. Indeed, possible events look unnatural. A spinning top which leans without look quite natural, physicists. Falling is an object of wonder to all. It is not surprising to find that the most of us, even of classical mechanics, are visible only in perfectly elastic point masses moving in vacuums on frictionless planes. In the real world, Newton's laws are masked by friction from the air, the ground, and the object's own molecules. With friction slowing everything that moves and keeping stationary objects in place, it's natural. With friction, it's natural to conceive of objects as having everything that moves. Historians of science have noted it would be hard to convince a medieval European struggling to free an ox cart from the mud that an object in motion continues at a constant speed along a straight line unless acted upon by an external force. Complicated motions like spinning tops and rolling wheels have a double disadvantage. They depend on complicated motions like evolutionarily unprecedented spinning tops and rolling governed by complex equations that relate many variables at once. Our perceptual system can handle only one at a time, even in the best of circumstances. Even the brainiest baby has a lot to learn. Children grow up in a world of sand, Velcro, glue, Nerf balls, rubbed balloons, dandy. Children grow up in a world of sand, lion seeds, boomerangs, objects suspended by near-invisible fishing line, and countless other objects whose idiosyncratic properties overwhelm the generic predictions of Newton's laws. The precociousness that infants show in the lab does not absolve them of learning about objects. It makes the learning possible. If children did not carve the world into objects, or if they were prepared to believe that objects could magically disappear and reappear anywhere, they would have no pegs on which to hang their discoveries. Objects could magically disappear and reappear anywhere. Intuitions captured in Aristotle's theory, the impetus theory, Newton's theory, or Wile E. Coyote's theory. An intuitive physics relevant to our middle-sized world has to refer to enduring matter and his theory. An intuitive physics awful motions, and in physics relevant to our... People everywhere are fine amateur biologists. They enjoy looking at animals and plants, classify them into groups that biologists recognize, predict their movements and life cycles, and use their juices as medicines, poisons, food additives, and recreational drugs. These talents, juices as medicines, poisons, which have adapted us to the cognitive niche, food additivology, though folk natural history may be a more apt term. People have certain intuitions about natural kinds. roughly the sorts of things found in a museum of natural history, such as animals, plants, and minerals, that they don't apply to artifacts, such as coffee pots, or to kinds stipulated directly, that they don't apply to artifacts, such as triangles, such as coffee. What is the definition of lion? You might say a large, ferocious cat that lives in Africa. But suppose you learned that a decade ago lions were hunted to extinction in Africa and survive only in American zoos. Suppose scientists discovered that lions weren't innately ferocious. They get that way in a dysfunctional family, but otherwise grow up like Bert Lahr in The Wizard of Oz. Suppose it turned out that they were not even cats. I had a teacher who insisted that lions really belonged in the dog family, and though she was wrong, she could have been right, just as whales turned out to be mammals, not fish. But if this thought experiment turned out to be lions, even if not be true, you don't have definitions. They are not even picked out by the picture of a lion in the dictionary next to the definition of the word. A lifelike mechanical lion wouldn't count as the real thing, and one can imagine breeding a striped lion that looked more like a tiger but would still count as a lion. Philosophers say that the meaning of a natural more like a tiger, but would still kind term, comes from an intuition as a lion, another, and with the first examples dubbed with the term. People don't need to know what the essence is, just that there is one. Some people probably think that lionhood is in the blood. Others might mumble something about DNA. Still others would have no idea, but would sense that lions all have it, whatever it is, and about DNA. Still others would pass it to their offspring. Have no idea, but... Physicists tell us that gold is matter with atomic number 79, as good an essence as we can hope for. But if they had miscalculated and it turned out that gold was 78 and platinum 79, we would not think that the word gold now refers to platinum or experience much of a change in the way we think about gold. Not think that the word gold now refers... Not... Compare these into a coffee pots. Coffee pots are pots for making coffee. The possibility that all coffee pots have an essence, that scientists might someday discover it, or that we might have been wrong about coffee pots all along and that they are really pots for making tea, are worthy of Monty Python's Flying Circus. If the driving intuition behind folk physics is the continuous solid object, and the driving intuition behind animacy is an internal and renewed physics is the continuous solid physics is the continuous solid object and an essence. Folk biology is said to be essentialistic. The essence has something in common with the oomph that powers animals' motions, but it also is sensed as something in common with the oomph as something in common with the oomph that powers like breathing and digestion. Of course, today we know that this élan vital is really just a tiny data tape and chemical factory inside every cell. Intuitions about essences can be found long ago and far away, even before Darwin, the Linnaean classification system used by long ago and far away. Evolutionary biologists was guided by before Darwin, but on underlying constitution. Peacocks and peahens were classified as the same animal, as were a caterpillar and the butterfly it turned into. Some similar animals, monarch and viceroy butterflies, mice and shrews, were put into different groups because of subtle differences in their internal structures. Mice and shrews were embryonic forms. Were put into every living thing belonged to one species, every species belonged to one genus, and so on up through families, classes, orders, and phyla to the plant and animal kingdoms, all in one tree of life. Again, compare this system with the classification of artifacts, say the tapes in a video store. They can be arranged by genre, such as dramas and musicals, by period classics, by alphabetical order, by country of origin, or by various cross-classing, or by various cross-classing, by period classic musicals. There is no single correct tree of videotapes. The anthropologists Brent Berlin and Scott Atran have discovered that folk taxonomies all over the world... The anthropologists Brent the same way as the Linnaean Berlin and Scott animals into kinds that correspond to the biologist's genus. Since there is usually only one species per genus in a locality, their categories usually match the biologist's species as well. Every folk genus belongs to a single life form, such as mammals, birds, mushrooms, herbs. Every folk genus belongs to insects or reptiles, single life form. People override appearances when classifying living things. For example, they lump frogs and tadpoles. They use their classes to reason about how animals work, such as who can breed with whom. One of Darwin's best arguments for evolution was that it explained why living things are hierarchically grouped. The tree of life's best arguments for evolution was that it is a family tree. The members explained why, because they are descendants of a common ancestor that passed it on. Species fall into groups within groups because they diverged from even earlier common ancestors. Embryonic and internal features are more sensible criteria than surface appearance because they better reflect degree of relatedness. Darwin had to fight his contemporaries' intuitive essentialism because, taken to an extreme, it implied that species could not change. A reptile has a reptilian essence and can no more evolve into a bird than the number 7 can evolve into an even number. As recently as the 1940s, the philosopher Mortimer Adler argued that just as there can be no 3.5-sided triangle, there can be nothing intermediate between an animal and a human. There's not ideal types, with members that vary. In the past, they could have shaded into in-between forms. Today, we have gone to the other extreme, and in modern academic life, essentialist is just about the worst thing you can call someone. In the sciences, essentialism is tantamount to creationism, just about the worst thing you can call someone. In the humanities, the label implies in that the sexes are not socially constructed, there are universal human emotions, a real world exists, and so on. And in the social sciences, essentialism has joined reductionism, determinism, and reification as a term of abuse hurled at anyone who tries to explain human thought and behavior rather than re-describe it. I think it is unfortunate that essentialism tries to explain human curiosity to find out what makes natural things work. Essentialism is behind the success of chemistry, physiology, and genetics, and even today, biologists routinely embrace the essentialist heresy when they work on the Human Genome Project. But everyone has a different genome. Or open up Gray's Anatomy Project. But everyone's bodies vary. Has a different genome. The psychologists Frank Kyle, Susan Gelman, and Henry Wellman have taken the philosopher's thought experiments about natural kinds and given them to children. Doctors take a tiger, bleach its fur, and sew on a mane. Is it a lion or a tiger? 7-year-olds say it's still a tiger, but 5-year-olds say it's now a lion. This finding, taken at face value, suggests that older children are essentialists about animals, but younger ones are not. At no face value suggests make a coffee pot look like a bird feeder. Children, like adults, say it just is a bird feeder. But with deeper probing, one can find evidence for essentialist intuitions about living feeder. But feeder. Coolers. With deeper probing, their boundary into plants or artifacts. For example, they say that a porcupine that looks as if it has been turned into a cactus or a hairbrush, in fact, has not. And preschoolers think that one species can be turned into another only when the transformation affects a permanent part of the animal's constitution, not when it merely alters appearance. For example, they deny that a lion costume of the animal's constitution remove the innards of a dog, the shell that remains while looking like a dog is not a dog and can't bark or eat dog food. But if you remove the outsides of a dog, leaving something that doesn't look like a dog at all, it's still a dog and does doggy things. Preschoolers even have a crude sense of inheritance. Told that a piglet is being raised by things. Preschoolers even have cows. They know it will grow up a crude sense of inheritance. Children do not merely sort animals like baseball cards, but use their categories to reason about how animals work. In one experiment, 3-year-olds were shown pictures of a flamingo, a blackbird, and a bat that looked a lot like the blackbird. The children were told that flamingos feed their babies mashed-up food, but bats feed their babies milk, and were asked what they thought the blackbird feeds its babies. With no further information, children went with appearances and said that blackbirds, like bats, give milk. But if they were told that a flamingo is a bird, the children thought of them as working like blackbirds, despite their different appearance, and guessed that blackbirds provide their babies with mashed-up food, too. Children also and guessed that blackbirds provide their babies with mallards. Would say that a rose has thorns because it helps the rose, but not that barbed wire has barbs to help the wire. They say that claws are good for the lobster, but not that jaws are good for the pliers. This sense of fitness or adaptation is not just a confusion between psychological wants and biological functions. The psychologists, shown that children have a clear sense that bodily processes are involuntary. They know that a boy can't digest dinner more quickly to make room for dessert, nor can he make himself fat by wishing alone. Is essentialism learned? Biological processes are too slow and hidden to show to a bored baby. Is essentialism learned? But testing babies is only one biological process. Another is to measure the source of the experience itself. Three-year-olds haven't taken biology, and they have few opportunities to experiment with the innards or the heritability of animals. Whatever they have learned about essences has presumably come from their parents. Gelman and her students analyzed more than 4,000 sentences from Mothers talking to their children about animals, they never talked about innards, origins, or essences, and the few times they did, it was about the innards of artifacts. Children are essentialists without their parents' help. Artifacts come with being human. We make tools, and as we evolved, our tools made us. One-year-old babies are fascinated by what objects can do for them. They tinker obsessively with sticks for pushing, cloth and strings for pulling, and supports for holding things up. Children show an understanding that tools have to contact their material, and that a tool's rigidity and shape are more important than its color or ornamentation. Some patients with brain tools rigidity and shape are more important which cannot name natural object in its color or suggesting that artifacts and natural kinds might even be stored in different ways in the brain. What is an artifact? An artifact is an object suitable for attaining some end that a person intends to be used for attaining that end. The mixture of mechanics and psychology makes artifacts a strange category, meaning that end. The meaning that artifacts can't be defined by mixture of mechanics and psychology and by what someone somewhere wants them to do. A store in my neighborhood sells nothing but chairs, but its inventory is as varied as a department store's. It has stools, high-backed dining chairs, recliners, bean bags, elastics and wires stretched over frames, hammocks, wooden cubes, plastic S's, elastics and wires stretched and foam rubber cylinders stretched over frames up. A stump or an elephant's foot can become a chair if someone decides to use it as one. Probably somewhere in the forests of the world, there is a knot of branches that uncannily resembles a chair. But like the proverbial falling tree that makes no sound, it is not a chair until someone decides to treat it as one. Kyle's young subjects, who happily let coffee pots turn into bird feeders, get the idea. An extraterrestrial physicist or geometer, unless it had our psychology, would be baffled by some of the things we think exist in the world when these things are artifacts. Chomsky points out that we can say that the book John is writing will weigh 5 pounds when it is published. The book is both a stream of ideas in John's head and an object with mass. We talk about a house burning down to... Consider what kind of object a city must be, given that we can say London is so unhappy, ugly, and polluted that it should be destroyed and rebuilt 100 miles away. When Atran claimed that folk biology mirrors professional biology, he was criticized because folk categories like vegetable and pet match no mirrors professional implies that they are artifacts. Not only are they defined by the needs they serve, savory succulent food, tractable companions, but they are quite literally human products. Millennia of selective breeding have created corn out of a grass and carrots out of a root. One has only to imagine packs of French poodle created corn out of a grass and created primeval forests, carrots out of a root. Daniel Dennett proposes that the mind adopts a design stance when dealing with artifacts, complementing its physical stance for objects like rocks and its intentional stance for minds. In the design stance, one imputes an intention to a real or hypothetical designer. To accomplishing an imputes an intention to, Dennett writes, There can be little doubt what an axe is or what a telephone is for. We hardly need to consult Alexander Graham Bell's biography for clues about what he had in mind. Others are notoriously open to rival interpretations, like paintings and sculpture, which are sometimes designed to have an inscrutable design. Still others, like Stonehenge or an assembly of gears found in a shipwreck, probably have a function, though we don't know what it is. Artifacts, because they depend on human shipwreck, just as if they were works of art, an activity Dennett calls artifact hermeneutics. And now we come to the mind's way of knowing other minds. Understand the simplest human actions. The psychologist Simon Baron Cohen makes the psychologist story. Mary walked into the bedroom, walked around, and walked out. How do you explain it? Maybe you'd say that Mary maybe wanted to find and thought it was in the bedroom. Maybe you'd say Mary heard something in the bedroom and wanted to was looking for something she wanted to find and thought was looking for something she wanted to find and was in the bedroom. Really intended to go downstairs. But you certainly would not say that Mary just does this every day at this time. She just walks into the bedroom, walks around, and walks out again. It would be unnatural to explain human behavior in the physicist's language of time, distance, and mass, and it would also be wrong. Human behavior in the physicist's If you came back tomorrow to test language of time, our minds explain other people's behavior by their beliefs and desires because other people's behavior is in fact caused by their beliefs and desires. The behaviorists were wrong, and everyone intuitively knows it. Mentsit are invisible and weightless. Philosophers define them as a relation between a person and a proposition. The relation is an attitude like believes that, desires that, hopes that, pretends that. The proposition is the content of the belief, something very roughly like the meaning of a sentence. For example, Mary finds the keys, or the keys are in the bedroom. The content of a belief lives in a different realm from the facts of the world. There are unicorns grazing in Cambridge Common is false, but from the facts of the world could very well be true. To ascribe a belief to someone, we can't just think a thought in the ordinary way, or we wouldn't be able to learn that John believes in unicorns without believing in them ourselves. We have to take a thought, set it aside in mental quotation marks, and think, that is what John thinks, or wants, or hopes for, or guesses. Mary knows that John thinks that there are unicorns. Thoughts need a special computational architecture, and when we communicate them to others, the recursive grammar proposed by Tversky and explained in The Language Instinct. End Chomsky and explained in The Language Side 6.